You're listening to a Mutiny Transmission.
You can find more podcasts, videos, books, comics, and records online at mutinyinfocafe.com.
Or just stop in the store in Denver and have a coffee sometime.
Book club, mutiny book club now, and I myself have read over 15 separate books. 8 of them were Far Side collections, obviously. 3 of them by William Burroughs, 1 book by Ernest Hemingway, and then 8 Cosmopolitan magazines. Book club, mutiny book club.
So we're going to start off with, we're going to read a couple of pages from... Later in the novel, talking about the author has given birth to her first child, and they had to keep him in the hospital for a few days, but she was discharged. So this is the immediate aftermath of that. Travis and I rented a room across the street from the hospital. He set the alarm clock so we would sleep in 90-minute intervals, rising to slip on our coats and shuffle across the street. Let's walk faster to warm up. I can't. My stitches. Oh, right. Sorry. Feed our baby as best we could in the 20 minutes allowed, and return to our room to repeat the process over and over. That first week of parenting was the hardest week of my life, and the only time I ever felt called upon to be heroic. However much my body wanted to rest, a force pulled me onto my feet with the clear and simple directive. Keep him alive. Welcome to Mutiny Book Club, everybody.
Hey!
How's it going? So we have today, the book that we're discussing this month is The Best We Could Do by T. Bowie. It is a graphic novel memoir. It is awesome. And I am your co-host, Jen Kolick, and we have with us my co-host, Byron Graham.
Hi, thank you.
And
our guest, Corey Healy.
Yeah. Hi.
Hello, everyone.
Mutiny Info Cafe dude and sound guy for this podcast and new parent, Corey Healy.
All of those things. Also, what, Big City Drugs bassist?
Yeah, I'm in a band.
Comedian.
I'm a comedian. I do those things.
You know, I write for The Westword and also do comedy. Sort of do our bio at the beginning, I guess.
Yeah, I think we usually do. I do not do comedy. I do the writing and the editing and the librarian stuff. And yeah, I do Queen City Companion.
Yeah.
I run Rotten Girl Press.
This would be insufferable if we were comedians and so were you.
I know.
Yeah. Thank you for not being a comedian.
I think that's the whole reason Byron wanted to
be
on this podcast.
I wanted you on the podcast because you're a much better reader than I am. And yeah, comedians are the worst. So this was two firsts for the podcast. First memoir and first graphic novel. What do you guys think of it?
I am very pro. I really like it's a deceptively fast read, because there is a lot of really heavy shit in this book.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a light read.
Yeah.
But it's thick for a graphic novel, and for some reason the cover page, did you find it like a little too tensile? Like it was physically hard to open it up, you know what I mean? I feel like the cover's rigid.
It does that thing where it has like a couple of extra pages of like, look at all the fucking amazing press this book has gotten.
It doubles the chance of a paper cut.
Yeah.
Oh,
the way it's cut. I know this isn't great material for the people at home to see how it's cut like an 80s rock star's hair feathered. But I almost slit myself a couple of times. Yeah.
This book will make you feel in more ways than one.
definitely.
Cut your fingertips.
Tagline: a book to break your heart and heal it. A book to give you a paper cut.
Yeah.
Corey Healy, no prize winner.
I also really liked it. I think it might be one of my favorite things we've read so far. I loved the style of the art. It's a very limited color palette. It's mostly blues and oranges and, you know, like there's a lot of evocative shadows. I feel it's deceptive how detailed it is, though, because it looks very simple, but the facial expressions and like the cityscapes are so evocative and well drawn.
They don't waste any space in the
visuals.
No,
not at all.
And if you think about something like, why does it look this way? It comes back later. I have no specific examples. But it's such a fast read. How can you have specific examples? They don't waste anything visually, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's pretty important. All the facial expressions are good.
Yeah, I was really expecting it to be a bummer. And it was sad, but it wasn't maudlin, you know?
Well, I mean, it's about, you know, it's about the Vietnam War. And
it is
about,
it's a bad,
you know,
thing that we did.
Yeah.
about time someone says it.
We're taking a stance here on Mutiny Book Club. Vietnam, misguided.
Not cool.
Let's say that. Vietnam War, bad idea. I think history's proven that.
I think this was a really... I would love to kind of do more of this. I've mm-hmm. been looking to do more of this lately where you get to read about things like this
mm-hmm.
from a perspective other than the American one.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, like read a history of Africa that's not by a white person, or like read a book about Vietnam about a Vietnamese person. Like, you know, it's something that there is so much more nuance and there's so much more going on.
Yeah.
Than the American point of view really.
Yeah, I feel
understand.
Like usually the perspective we get on the Vietnam War is that of an American soldier, and the, you know, Vietnamese characters are either figures of tragedy or menace, but they're not very well drawn, no pun intended.
Most of the history I truly know is like a timeline of just things that happened in Forrest Gump, and then you just eliminate Forrest. And like,
something bit me. We didn't need that. We didn't need
we
to
did.
Do any
we
of
did.
It.
And I feel like if we were given the opinion of outsiders, and that's not the right word to say, but it, you know.
Well, we were outsiders there. We were colonizers.
Yeah, I think in every sense, man, if we could just have this book for every historical thing that we grew up thinking was, if there was a tea buoy that could do Columbus for us. That
sure.
That would really help answer some of those questions maybe our early education's missed.
I thought that it brought like the, you know, a big global conflict down to a very human scale.
Oh, yeah.
Which made it resonate more because you've seen a lot of these images, sometimes literally before. There are recreations of, you know, that famous photograph of
the Saigon execution.
Yeah, photo. Yeah. And I liked how not only did you see that, but you got the context of like, well, it's, you know, that guy had just killed people's families. So it was more of a revenge than just a cold-blooded killing. But
and
that
now
what
the officer in the photo works at, like a restaurant in Virginia or something
and
like that.
Yeah, the photographer went to find him.
Yeah.
And yeah, I thought like I'd never known that. I thought that was all so fascinating. And yeah, it made you feel things. It made you feel things. You know, yeah, you feel things.
they foreshadowed that really well, where they mentioned the photograph, and then what feels like a novel later, but it was really 28 pages later. You know, 100 pages, whatever later, they brought it back into the book and explained it more fully, and that was like, I mean. Every good author does that with stuff. But since it's seriously such a quick read, like this is like an hour and a half to get through this, guys. It just happens like, you know, 10 minutes later in your read, it fully explains everything and it like clears things up. Oh, man, I know that it's a book club, but this is like so much like as much visual as it was wordly important to me.
Yeah.
those are words people use.
Wordly.
Well, and I think there is... you know, so my partner is also a writer, and he writes fiction and he writes screenplays, and he's been toying around with the idea of doing graphic novels also. And it's really interesting to talk about stuff like, oh, well, I have this idea for a story, but I don't know if it should be a short story or if it should be a graphic novel or if it should be a screenplay, and kind of talking about, well, what would each medium add or subtract to the kind of story that you want to tell?
Yeah.
And thinking about, you know, why is this a graphic novel?
I don't know if you could tell it in any other medium.
No, and I mean, the really easy answer is that this is her chosen art form and this is her story.
Yes.
So, of course, this is how she's going to tell her story. But, yeah, it is so...
Well, what I found, she spent 12 years on this book. She spent 12 years working on it.
Yeah.
And during that time, she taught herself how to draw graphic novels. She has no formal... And it's amazing how precise and elegant the art is for somebody who's self-taught completely.
Somewhere on here, it says that she... Or maybe at the end of the book, it mentions that she now teaches... She currently teaches in the MFA and comics program at California College of the Arts. If she's taught herself comics in the last 12 years, that means that was not an early part of her life, which would make a lot of comic book nerds pissed off.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Well, I think...
But that's awesome. She's great.
I think that she was kind of what you were getting after, where she was looking for a way to tell this story. And then one of the things that influenced her was, Mouse by Art Spiegelman and... Persepolis by Marjane Satrapi. Mm-hmm. And those were a great way to put a biographical element to this grand, historical narrative. And I don't know, it doesn't soften it, but it makes it more bearable than watching live footage of it or
Jesus Christ.
watching a documentary about Vietnam is a completely different experience than this. And I thought it was it's gonna be reading Ken Burns documentary. But it's not. It's
that's
so
how I
humane
prepped for this.
And, yeah.
Well, and that's I think that kind of brings us into the next thing that I want to talk about, which is that the Vietnam itself is really only half the story. The other half of the story is really a family story.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about, that the author is growing up and starting her own family and looking back and trying to sort of figure her parents out as people. And there are so many little moments in this book where you can tell she worked on it for 12 years. You mm-hmm. can tell she spent so much time and so much energy really thinking about what this story is and what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
There's one panel at the beginning of chapter 5 where she says, "Writing about my mother is harder for me, maybe because my image of her is too tied up with my opinion of myself." I think that is probably something that literally every woman alive can relate to. But it's something that we often don't want to talk to ourselves about because it's hard and we don't like to think about it. But there's so much really interesting stuff about sort of dealing with your family.
Mm-hmm.
Two that I found really engaging and really interesting.
Yeah, they become more human in a way. I think that the process of interviewing her parents for months, for 12 years to get at all of these stories, that must completely change the whole dynamic of your relationship to have that much insight into, the struggles that they had when you were just born or even before you were born. And I feel like she talks about in interviews a lot how she would never be able to have these conversations were it not for the pretense of the book, where she's like, "I'm writing a book about this," and that opened up the floodgates. She talks about how her dad was this kind of taciturn guy, and then she started interviewing him and it all just came spilling out. I don't know. I just feel like that's got to completely change your relationship, and it forces you to kind of confront how you see the reflection of yourself and your mom, or if you're a guy or your dad. I think that it can be both. I don't know. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
No, but I think there's something really specific about you know, there's one scene where she and her husband are in the car with her mom, and it's her mom and her husband in the front seat, and she's kind of in the back listening.
Yeah.
And there is stuff that her mom is telling her husband about her life before she became a parent, when she was young and she was in school, and she's saying, like, that was the happiest time of my life. And, you know, the author is just kind of thinking about, like, that it's, like, well, I mean, that's honest, you know, like that's kind of hurtful. But also, like, she's understanding that, like, I mean, there's a reason that my mother feels like she can say this to my husband and not me.
Sure.
But also, like, isn't she entitled to be like, well, no, my life was a lot less complicated before war broke out and everyone was starving and we had to, like, you know, hide in a boat and go to Malaysia and, like, all this shit.
And lost multiple children. Like, I feel like her mom goes through more than anybody.
Right.
She like, by far, I think, loses the most out of everyone in the book.
Right. Cause for her mom, it's not just, oh, before I became a parent, I was happier. It's before my firstborn daughter died. I was happier.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear more about, like, especially, like, when she met, like, how did Bo exactly win her over during these years when she was, like, super sought after by the dudes in her school, and then that just all changed, but they didn't go deep into what made him win her over.
Seems like he knocked her up.
I think they did allude to that, but, like, if he was the only boy she ever, like, dared to...
Sure.
To get knocked up by, like, what was it about Bo? I mean, obviously he was an intelligent dude.
No, I...
Sorry. I think there was...
I just
want
to be respectful to an old couple. If they were 40 years younger, I'd say the F word about them. They're still alive, if you don't... Spoilers.
I don't think they're going to listen to this podcast, though.
Yeah.
Well, some...
Yeah.
Maybe they've got a Google alert.
I think there was... it was briefly mentioned in, like, one panel that he basically just started monopolizing all of her time.
Right, and that's
like
that's
that
what
he was just
so
kind
curious.
Of always around and, like, super interested. She's just like, okay. But then she also admits the thing to her daughter that she has probably never admitted to him, which is that he was very sick.
She thought he was going to die.
Yeah, he had tuberculosis that he had caught from his grandmother, I think, at some point.
Yeah.
And she literally did not think he was going to live very long. So she was like, okay, I'll marry you for now. And, like, in 5 years, I'll be single again. Like, which is...
I had a relationship like that in college. I get it. She is doing very well today.
Don't go looking for love in the TB ward. That's the lesson we learned there.
Good advice for us all.
But yeah, they did mention that they got married 9 months before their daughter was supposed to be born.
Yeah.
So it
not
does seem
quite 9 months.
Yeah,
I think
that there was...
All right, don't make me be the expert on how babies are born, but it's about a 10-month thing.
I mean, you're out of
when
the
it
three
comes
of
down
us.
To it.
You're the only one that actually has one, so I think we're going to defer to you here.
At some point when I was reading this, I did start thinking to myself, do these guys just know every book in the world? And then they were like, all right, I think Corey would really relate to some of these parts of this book. Because, like, I was an emotional wreck all through this book, thinking about childbirth and things like that. It was
that's
beautiful.
Kind of, that's one of the perspectives, as two non-breeders, that's perspective.
Quit rubbing it in that I'm in the band The Breeders. And you're not. I love The Breeders.
They're great.
Sorry, go ahead.
I want to, like, because she mentions, again, T-Boy in interviews mentions how the having a child changed her whole writing process, changed her perspective on the book, changed her perspective on her relationship with her own parents. And I was wondering, you know, did this resonate with you on a deeper level because of that, like a level that we may not get as non-breeders?
I wouldn't say that you guys can't reach that emotional level with your parents without having a kid, but I don't know. I've maybe felt that way. Okay, not counting the book, I've maybe been more interested in, like, spending time with her, mm-hmm. being on great terms with my parents, who I am on great terms with anyways, despite, mm-hmm. like, you know, their own political beliefs that, you know, Beau's parents had to go through at some point. Like, you still got to maybe love your parent or one of your parents or your grandparents, look past some things. Sometimes just don't get kicked in the nuts, I think, or the stomach. Was he kicked in the stomach? Is that what his dad did to him?
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, yeah.
That was weird. That was a hard page to translate in my brain. Cause it's like, why did he just kick him in the stomach? But yeah, this book super made me super just like needy to talk to my mom, which I'll do later. she liked the post I made earlier, so she expects it. But very grateful to my own wife because yeah. not only, I mean, my wife is an OB nurse, so she was very aware of the like moment she was pregnant almost.
Sure.
Like
yeah.
An hour later, she's like, I think it's cool this time. I think we're good. but before that, like, you know, we had like what we thought was maybe going to be a baby, but then wasn't. It wasn't like a huge loss. But after that, it makes you more sensitive to maybe people who have lost
yeah,
a baby
absolutely.
That was older than
yeah.
4 weeks old. Like, I mean, I'm not like a. I don't believe a baby is exactly a baby for a while. I don't know when that point is. I don't really care when anyone else thinks it is. It's a weird topic to think about, but some people it's a baby right away, and that's kind of
sure.
how we felt. So after one went away, it was like, man, we really need the second one to work out. It's a lot
yeah.
of pressure. But
well, and I think whether you believe it's a baby or not, like it's potential.
Yeah, it's potential.
Loss
like
is
it's
loss.
The potential. Yeah.
yeah. It's like, you know, putting a quarter in a slot machine and hoping. Hoping that quarter turns into many coins. But
that's
after
exactly
that, it made me
like.
Feel for a lot of people who've lost kids or who can't conceive. And it's, I could fucking probably throw a rock on this block and hit two bartenders that couldn't conceive for the
sure.
life of them, but maybe want to or can't. Or friends of mine that have tried, it's just a big bummer. Our kid was born almost fine, but specifically had a jaundice scare.
Oh,
which is
yeah.
a part of this book
that's
where like my heart started like fucking pounding.
Yeah.
And I was like cry reading. And that's super scary shit to think. Like she makes what might be a joke, might not be, but she
oh,
says,
yeah.
why is my baby yellow?
Yeah.
It's it's half Asian. And I was just like I hope that I hope that's a joke, because like, man, it's like it would be so great to have a bit of humor in such a shitty time, because like
sure.
that was the most terrifying day of my life, was thinking my kid had jaundice.
Oh God.
And it
yeah.
being under like the lamps, not the same lamps in the book, but a similar lamp structure
yeah.
that like had to keep my baby a certain temperature. You couldn't touch it. And right now I have a friend in Greece who's going through a similar thing where he can't
oh,
touch
God.
His baby
yeah.
fucking
oh,
at all. And
oh
it
man,
is
this
that's
guy.
Terrifying. What's that?
That's a nightmare.
Oh yeah. It makes what my wife and I went through seem like a breeze.
Yeah.
Like we couldn't touch my baby for 3 hours, hold him for 10 minutes, can't touch him for 3 hours. They can't see their kid more than 5 minutes a day or something like
yeah.
that, or
and they
touch
gotta,
him for that much.
They got, it's like he's in that incubator and they have those gloves where they can reach through. And it's nuts because they're not from Greece, they're from Atlanta.
Yeah, they're from
she
Atlanta,
was on a
Georgia.
Trip to Greece and went into very early labor. And now they are stuck there for like the first 6 months of this kid's life.
Wow.
And it's like, on the one hand, you're like, hey, it's Greece. But on the other hand, they can't do anything.
Yeah.
It's like they
I mean,
can't
on the other
go,
hand,
like
your entire life is on pause.
Yeah, no.
And like there's something wrong with your kid. And like,
they're
yeah.
six blocks away from the hospital almost at all times. They can't Jesus just go Christ. Like chill on Idra for a couple days. yeah, that is so insane. And yeah, I do think that I obviously I can understand it from like. I can think about it and surmise what that might be like, but the depth of feeling, I don't think that I can fully understand, you know, like most parents say, like you can't really fully understand it until it's yours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to brag. I just didn't want to have that over anybody.
You guys don't understand.
yeah, that's never a fun thing to say over. I don't know your cases. You might be one of those bartenders out there. Just... real sad. Anyways, shout out to anyone trying to conceive and can't. And man, if your kid has jaundice, ugh. My dad had jaundice, double pain in this
point. Whoa.
My I think he got it from a bad buffet, though. So he had the kind of jaundice you earn. Anyways, can I tell you guys the next page where I cried really hard?
Sure.
Yes.
Like, this is like the first page of the book where I super cried. where it wasn't just like a tremble, like, oh man, this shit's gonna get bad, but like, oh my god. And it's the first time they show the family's photos when into the relocation camp.
Yeah, that got me.
And I'm just like, I just stopped maybe for like 5 minutes and just bawled and like held my dogs.
Because, listener, those are the real photos.
Mm-hmm.
They're not illustrations. It's the real photos that are included.
After the refugee camp photos in Malaysia. It also makes you realize how fucking good the art is. Because
That baby face of hers looks just like her real face. Or the cartoon face.
There's very simple lines, but it's just so expressive. I one thing I thought was interesting is that it's sort of billed as Tibui's memoir, but she's kind of absent figure in it until the end, not absent but passive. I would say that it's much more the story of her parents, mm-hmm. particularly of her dad. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like the big narrative sweep is Bo's story, and Bo is, I believe, the Vietnamese word for dad, because his name is Nam.
Yeah. Yeah, there were a lot of instances where I was just like thinking of my son the whole time I was looking at pictures or images that they drew of Bo, and was just like, man, like, I can never sour my marriage. Like, I can't cheat on my wife. I can't bring home paintings of naked women that like there was mention of like inadvertently like poisoning your kid's brain or like inadvertently giving them demons. I forget the exact quote.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's something I think very much about, where it's like, I don't even try to like push onto him sports teams that I care about. Like my dad's a former photographer and took baby photos of my kid, and he's like, let's grab that Red Sox jersey or something of yours. And I was like, all right, just because we asked you to do this.
Trying not to push sports on your 5-month-old, maybe?
3-month-old. See, that's the joy of America. Is the biggest problem I have is that my son not liking the team that's currently in the World Series, but wasn't the day he was born. But I don't know. What if that's like an inadvertent thing that he grows up in Denver, Colorado, and he's a Red Sox fan, but all of his friends love the Rockies, and he deserves to root for his home team. I don't need to instill in him a faith in a city he may never go to. It's all silly.
Can I share
tell me
something
how awful
with
this
you?
Is? Yes, please.
That will probably make you feel a lot better. I used to work with a young woman. She was 17, and so goddamn smart that she skipped a grade, so she was taking a year off before she went to college.
God, that's cool.
She could not eat candy of any kind, or she would get violently ill because she had never had sugar in her life. So at least you know you're not going to fuck your kid up like that.
I do, yeah. I've already given
your kid
like
will be able to have a
honeys.
Fucking Twix if he wants one when he's 30, right? Like,
I just want my children to be chill.
Corey Healy, he puts the chill into children.
Did you just think of my blog tagline? Because I'm
I
starting
of,
one now.
I thought of a whole franchise of daycare centers.
We play 3:11 in the morning, noon, end at 3:11.
The whole place is a bouncy house.
I like that idea.
Very
much.
Was there any, like, there were a couple, I feel like, I mean, it must have been such a painstaking process. It obviously took 12 years, but there's a lot that's not in it, too. There's a lot of things that are just sort of obliquely hinted at, like how Bick is estranged from the family. And by the way, I was pronouncing that wrong until they specifically pointed out it's Bick.
So yeah. It only mentions like it like twice before. It's like, it's not bitch. Don't say this wrong.
What a burden.
I love the way
what
that,
a burdensome
that
name.
She put that in there, too.
Yeah.
It's just like a portrait of her going, it's Bick, okay? Yeah.
After I finished the book, I YouTubed a video just to see more about the author and like what she was about.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a reading somewhere. And like she's like, all right, I just need some volunteers from the audience to read some of the parts. First things first, though, it's Bick.
Yeah. You will be portraying Bick, and it's very important that you pronounce it Bick.
That's what a stranger from the... I hate my name.
I think that's a very cool thing she does at her readings, where instead of... Like, she'll go out on stage alone, but then she'll enlist audience members to play the cast.
Green Day pulled my friend on to play bass once at a concert in Fiddler's Green, dude. It was pretty cool. Shout out Matt White.
That's the same.
The Foo Fighters do that. It's the same.
It's pretty much the same. I mean, you know, she's basically Dave Grohl.
Holy shit.
But it's like a extra literary version of popcorn. It's great. You know popcorn? Popcorn style read-along? Where you read a couple pages and then you popcorn to somebody else?
Oh, no, I've never done that. Oh. That sounds fun.
It does. You know, we did it in school. It was a way to, like
keep everyone from
keep
falling
asleep. Yeah.
Ooh, for the Patreon, we should we should record one of those where you guys do that, and then listeners can...
We could.
Just pick something from public domain, free of charge.
Slowest audiobook ever. do you want to do concluding thoughts before also Reds?
Yeah, I think this is one of those things that's kind of obliquely in the book, but not really explicitly mentioned, which is, like, she kind of talks about all of the things that her parents, purposely or not, kind of passed on to her, like all the fears and all of the, you know, which kind of left me, like, because I'm kind of in between where it's like...
Was the Vietnam War good or bad? I get it.
No. Where, you know, I'm like probably going to be starting a family in a couple of years. Mm. And it's like, oh, I wonder how I'm going to fuck my kids up. Like probably different ways than my parents fucked me up. But like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, well, they did this, this, and this wrong. So I'm not going to do that. But I'm going to make completely other fucking mistakes that they'll tell me about in 30 years. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Like, I wonder what's going to happen with that.
Yeah, do you ever have that thought? You're like, oh boy, this is going to be brought up in therapy. This kid is going to need to talk to a professional.
Sometimes I have to hold him while I pee.
Oh, yeah. That's... Get ready.
And to just make it really easy, I just do it at the shower door. So if he... I don't think that he'll remember this, but I think technology will be able to pry into his eyeballs and, like, show what he saw
like
as a child
mirror.
Under a screen. So
I
that
mean, he's not making memories yet. It's fine.
That's a true. That's a true thing I worry about. is like him getting his memory shown on a screen somewhere in a mental hospital, and they're like, "Your dad used to do dabs at the door while you were in a chair in the living room." CPS. See you soon. I'm in constant fear that I'm gonna project something bad onto him, or he's gonna. Not see something bad because I'm not a bad person, but I don't know. So long as I don't send my kid to Catholic school, I can't
That's
do anything.
Amen to that.
Thanks.
And peace be unto you as well.
if it was the only bilingual school in Denver, though, I'd do it.
Sure. All right. Any other concluding thoughts?
I mean, that's really my main concluding thought, I think.
If you haven't, I do want to encourage listeners and audience members to read this book. It's great.
Regardless of, us talking about it, like...
I feel like it's also, it's very, like, you know, in our political climate where, you know, people are scaremongering over a caravan of refugees, I think that it's very important to have these human stories about immigrants to make, you know, not that I think our listeners are all liberal and great, but... You know, the tendency to think of, you know, to be reductive and to focus on, like, I don't know, what threat these refugee seekers, you know, asylum seekers might pose. I just feel like stories like this are more valuable than ever that show the personal, like, that make you see this experience from, like, a much closer perspective than a geopolitical one. That was a big word salad. And I hope that there's
like seeing
something
the lengths,
meaningful in it.
Seeing the lengths they go through, like, to stay together and then to go live with other family, A, in Chicago, and then B, later on in San Diego. Like, it just shows that the roots are deeper than just the people showing up at the door. Like, sometimes they have family to join. Sometimes they've got businesses that they want to start. Like, it's... Not all the money just goes back home, necessarily.
Sure,
and if it does, fucking cool with me.
Yeah, I applaud that.
Make them well and bring them back here, and we'll all do good.
Okay, want to do also reds?
Yeah, I'll do an also red.
Okay.
This
is where
month,
we say what else we read this month.
This month I also read a biography of Alice B. Sheldon, who wrote science fiction under the name James Tiptree Jr. It is fucking awesome, and it's just called James Tiptree Jr., The Double Life of Alice B. Sheldon. It's really, really interesting.
What era was she working in?
She was writing science fiction between the like mid to late 60s and the early 80s.
Okay.
And she really, it really was kind of like a double life. Like she had a very distinctive voice as James Tiptree that didn't come out anywhere else. And she was, I believe, in her 50s by the time she actually started writing fiction. She came of age in, so she came from a fucking rich family in Chicago and like had like a debut.
Oh, like a debutante. Yeah.
Yeah. In like the 1930s. So it was, yeah, she had a really, really interesting life, and some of the ways that she dealt with her fears for humanity and the sort of feminism that she figured out on her own, and then once she was like in her late 50s, early 60s, how she kind of interacted with the second wave that was happening outside. Yeah, it's really, really interesting.
What are some Tiptree books you'd recommend? Which is, by the way, a great fucking nom de plume. Tiptree?
She mostly did short stories. The one that got me really obsessed with her was a story called The Girl Who Was Plugged In.
Okay.
Which is fucking insane. And really, really good. There was also a novel called Brightness Falls from the Air. That's really good also. It's almost set up as like a whodunit on like another planet, and all these people come together to like watch the final nova of like a dying star and all
cool.
Like it's really fucking cool.
Check it out.
That's my also recommend.
Heartily recommend it. Corey, anything else notable this month?
No, a lot of notable stuff. I tried to read this to my kid, by the way.
Oh.
But I don't think it was bright enough.
Sure.
thanks for making it a short read for me, so
it wasn't
too much trouble.
Happy to help.
Mostly kids' books, man.
Sure.
Star Wars does a lot of kids' stuff. One just shows you the name of every character and an item in the Star Wars universe for kids. A book called Mama, Is It Summer Yet? young boy asking his mom if it's summer yet. My favorite, though, and I did cry at the end of this, Puddle Pug. About a pug who's trying to find the perfect puddle. He loves puddles. He tries them all. Some are shallow. Some are too deep. Some have other animals in them. And he finds the perfect puddle, which is full of pigs. And they don't like the pug, so they tell him to get out of our puddle, and then I won't ruin the end for you, but he finds a way back into that. A very great story. Not in a silly way. He doesn't
pretend to be a
pig. It's a good story.
Okay.
Welling up thinking about it.
Puddle pug. Everybody, pick that up. I read The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson, which is just one of the fucking best haunted house stories ever written. She's so good. She's one of my favorite writers. If you haven't read it, I recommend it very, very heartily. Read it twice. Also, it has almost nothing to do with the Netflix show.
Almost nothing?
It's weird. They have character names that repeat throughout the show.
Oh yeah.
And they quote her a lot, like in the monologues and stuff. But the story's completely different. There's no
So it's more like inspired by than based on, maybe?
It's almost like, yeah, it's like fan fiction of it. No, that's not the way to describe it. It's inspired by it, and they take a lot of text from Shirley Jackson, but it's completely different characters, and it's set in modern day, and not, you know, in the 60s when the book came out.
Wasn't there like a movie with Catherine Zeta-Jones a while ago that was also based on
every version of the, every time they've tried to adapt it into a movie, it's been pretty bad. But that, The Haunting in 1999, probably the worst one. Probably the worst.
Awesome.
Just like a real bad CGI, overacting, really, yeah, not a fan. Thumbs
down. It was kind of all bad CGI in the late 90s.
Yeah, it took a while to get over the uncanny valley for CGI. But yeah, I mean, some books are a classic for a reason. And even though, you know, just being in the culture, you're familiar with the beats of the story, like going it back and digging into it has so much value. We got to do a Shirley Jackson book one of these months. She's great. All right. Any other final words? Plugs? Let's plug things. Want to plug some things?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I have any plugs. Man. Yeah, I'll put this out. This will go out soon. Halloween night at Ratio. I'm hosting Doom Room, a comedy show / just weird shit happens. It's strange. It's fun. And then after that, I'm on a show at Black Buzzard. I'm thinking of the name.
Shtick or Treat.
Shtick or Treat.
Who are you being?
Larry the Cable Guy.
Nice.
As I am one to do. As I am one person to do.
I brought up my idea for Shtick or Treat as a joke, and now I have to do it. I'm going to be Hannah Gadsby.
you can't pitch that to Sam and him not bite.
I look a lot like her, and I want it to be a respectful portrayal.
That's gonna be amazing.
Australian accents are so hard.
Holy shit!
Also, Designated Drunkard, a comedy drinking game, every first Saturday at the Comedy Room in El Chorrito. I feel like those are, and yeah, this podcast which you're listening to right now.
Yeah. What are my things? I have a Kindle book out. It's a short story called Us What's Left. It is a zombie story with like feelings and gore and stuff. So it has everything. That's cool. I have a show, a variety show called Queen City Companion that I co-host with Brian Flynn. The next one is going to be Thursday, November 1st here at Mutiny at 8 o'clock. I can't tell you much about it because I have no idea what most of these people are going to do, except for the fact that my co-host here, Byron Graham, will be reading some Victorian erotica.
Yes, the thrilling continuation of erotic saga of Cheeky Cheevington.
It's going to be amazing.
And La Comtesse du Maurier.
And I'm also a producer on Know Your Shit, which is basically comedy TED Talks. That happens the third Saturday of every month at 7 o'clock at the Comedy Room. Okay, Brian's nodding. I got all that right. Okay.
Brian, Brian Flynn, favorite audience member. Great at pantomiming. Great.
We're getting a thumbs up and a, oh, stop.
We need a catchphrase to sign off with.
Do we?
No, I guess not.
Book 'em, Dano.
Well, yeah, thanks for tuning in. Check out our next episode. We'll be reading Cherry by Nico Walker, and our guest will be Sam Talent. Thanks.
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 Mutiny Book Club. Now let's do a short one for him. Mutiny Book Club.
Mutiny Transmissions is a media service that provides podcasts, video, and live shows recorded inside and outside of Mutiny Information Cafe, located at 2 South Broadway in Denver, Colorado.